Welcome to the Buckhead Church Podcast. If you want to learn how you can be more engaged with our church, check us out online at buckheadchurch.org, or you can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. I hope the following message inspires you to take the next step forward in your faith journey. Check it out.
Cheryl, thanks for being with us. You've been a part of Buckhead Church for a while. You've been in Atlanta for a while, but I'll let you tell a little bit of that background, if you would. Give us the history of Cheryl Batchelder.
Well, Clay, it's great to be with you today. I look forward to this opportunity to talk with you and with our viewers. I guess the way to describe who I am today is I'm in kind of the wisdom stage of life. Some millennials told me that. They said, we now come to you for wisdom. And I said, okay, that means I'm old. But I rather relish the opportunity to come alongside business people in either a board role or a mentoring role. And that's what I do today. I serve on three large boards, two small up-and-coming company boards, and mentor about six different nonprofit leaders. So that's my joy. 3 years ago, I was CEO of Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. That's the part of my career that's probably best known. And that company was sold 3 years ago, and I found myself rapidly pivoting to this new stage of life. But the primary theme of my career, Clay, if I kind of cut to the chase, is I have been what's called a turnaround artist. I walk into companies that are troubled, struggling brands, struggling people, and try to make order and sense out of that so that they can compete in a relevant and contemporary way. And it's been a privilege to do that at multiple companies, primarily in the food and restaurant sector.
Which I feel like your background in that, Cheryl, is, as we've talked about previously, is very relevant to what people are dealing with today. And so just want to tell all of you that are watching today, we are going to get toward the end of this interview, we're going to be able to talk to Cheryl about what she's learned about managing, pivoting a business, about managing crisis, about dealing with hard times, which a lot of business leaders find themselves in right now. So I really, I feel really grateful for that turnaround artist background that you have. I think it will really come in handy for this conversation.
Well, thank you, Clay. And there's no question that a crisis is just a version of a turnaround. So I look forward to sharing some thoughts on that.
I do also want to talk about, I want to get to the Popeyes part of your story in just a bit. But before we even get there, I love the turnaround artist title. You're also, I'm sure people recognize that quickly, you're a female. And there just aren't a lot of, there aren't as many female CEOs. You're one of a minority in that way. What have you learned about that? What have you learned about being in a lot of boardrooms, a lot of C-level executive meetings, being the only female?
Well, it is true. In my career span, I was usually the first woman in the room, whether it was in management or in the boardroom. And so I've always been kind of an odd duck. I think that times that has been a struggle to feel normal, right, among peers and to feel credible and respected. But I would tell you, on the whole, I've had a really fabulous experience being a woman in management. And today, I'm honored to be a role model to other women, particularly working mothers, because that's what I am. I've been married 39 years to my husband, Chris. We've raised three daughters that are now adults. We now are at the grandparent stage with four grandsons. And I really think we do need to have conversations about family, work, marriage, and how it all fits together to be healthy humans. And so I'm glad to be part of that discussion, Clay. I will tell you, I used to get kind of tired of the work-life balance question. So I said, okay, well, there's this cool book title. It says, Think Like a Man, Act Like a Lady, Work Like a Dog. And so for years, that's pretty much my answer to the question.
Go read that book.
Go read that book or, you know, figure out your own tagline, either one. But I would tell you, Clay, in all seriousness, that there was some truth to that funny book title for me. In my stage of life, I learned most of what I learned about strategy, operations, and talent from men leaders. And I've been blessed to learn from some fabulous men leaders who I deeply respect. I did make a decision early on that I wanted to be a female leader and be, you know, the act like a lady part is real to me. I didn't want to change. I didn't want to dress like a man or talk like a man. I wanted to use my God-given gifts to bring to the table. And I have found that the sooner I got comfortable doing that, the more effective I was as a leader. And then finally, the work like a dog. You know, to be honest, I am the granddaughter of some dairy farmers in Indiana who work from 4 a.m. till dark. And it's pretty deep in my DNA to work like a dog. And I think it's helped my career. I think I've always been about effort and excellence and going deep with people and business opportunity. And I think it's served me well. But the most important thing I say to women, and I think it's relevant for men too, is the sooner we become our authentic selves at work, you know, operating out of our strengths, our God-given design, the more effective we are as leaders. And I really encourage people to lay down the critiques of others and the expectations of others and focus on the gifts you've been given.
I love that. And in the little bit of time that we've spent together, you've been a really great advocate, not just for making sure that we in our organization have women around the table helping make decisions, but also people that don't look like me, people that aren't white, people that aren't 39 years old. It's one of the most beautiful aspects of our church is we really do have such a beautiful array of color and also age, and you've been a real benefit for me in that. So thank you. Can you tell just one story? We don't have this in the notes, but we can edit it out if you choose not to. But can you tell the story about the person that you were working with who said, "I turn my radio, I turn my music down when I'm coming on the property"?
You know, I have been privileged to lead businesses that were very diverse. So to use the Popeyes example specifically, 40% of our customers were African American, and we operated in 26 countries with different nationalities, religions, backgrounds, and ages for sure. So that's how you learn how to function in a diverse environment, is to be immersed in one. One particular story, though, that really caught my attention is I was asking some of the African Americans in our home office at Popeyes what we could do to make the work environment effective for them. And in the process of learning about some of the things that were on their minds, one of them said, "Well, it may come as a surprise to you, but when I pull in the parking lot, I roll up my windows and turn down my music so that I'm not viewed as different from you." And I was really heartbroken by that thought, that a person couldn't listen to their music on the way into the office, couldn't be, you know, I find music the most renewing thing in my life. And I was particularly touched by that story and said, you know, we've got to find ways to be more cognizant of our differences and more accepting of those differences. It's really just a lack of understanding, right? If I don't like your music, it's really because I don't understand you or what you like about it. We haven't had that conversation. And so I encourage people struggling with diversity issues, as simple as that or more complex as we work together, is to have some really candid conversations with one another. I encourage men to ask women, you know, what's it like to work here? What do you struggle with? What changes could we make as a team that would make it easier for you to be successful here? And that question works for any age or ethnic or gender diversity question you have.
I love that. And what did you tell that gentleman who felt like he needed to roll his windows up and turn the music down?
Roll them down and turn it up. just not okay. We have to give you permission to be who you are. I want your best version. I want your best self at work.
I love that. And I think the first time I heard you tell that story, I think you even told the person, hey, and by the way, share the music with me and I'll start listening to it as well. Is that true?
Exactly. Tell me what station you're listening to. I want to hear it.
I was so inspired by that story because I feel like that story really, it says a lot about who you are, that that's the kind of leader you are, that is saying, hey, I want to know my people. I want to know what they're dealing with. I want to know what they're feeling. And I also see the beauty of having different voices, different eyes, different perspectives, again, in nationality, in race, in whatever that word is that I'm trying to say, in age, that we have those all kinds of people sitting around the table, but you care so deeply for people, which I think is a remarkable trait.
Well, Clay, there's a biblical principle for me. There's a biblical principle for me behind that thought, which is I truly believe in the dignity of every single created being. And most people say they believe in dignity, but they don't always bring it to work. And at work, dignity looks like making time for people and time to get to know them. And it's easy to make excuses about that and say, I don't have time to get to know you. But I would tell you, you don't have time not to get to know your people because you cannot access their best performance capability if you know nothing about their life, their values, their experiences, what they bring to you. I'm a fanatic about spending time with people and their whole person, not just their work person.
Well, let's get into the Popeyes story, because as you mentioned earlier, that's what it seems like you're best known for. But before you jump into that part of your life, was that your favorite? Is that your favorite season of your work life for you?
You know, I often tell people, I think, you know, you're very blessed if you get one or two pinnacle career experiences. Mm-hmm. They're not all pinnacles, you know. Mm-hmm. You learn from all of them, but they're not all pinnacles. So yes, Popeyes is by far a pinnacle experience for my career in so many ways. Certainly in the success we experienced together as a team, as a company, that was thrilling. But the lessons learned, the kind of capstone nature of it being late in my career, all of that contributed to it just being fabulous.
Well, let's jump into what you walked into. This was, what year was this, 2007, 2008?
Fall of 2007, which you might remember was 1 year before the total collapse of 2008. That's relevant to the story.
Yes. Well, tell us about, paint the picture. What was happening at Popeyes when you got named CEO?
Well, you know, I thought about this today. I want to talk about this in the context of what you do when you go into any crisis or turnaround situation, so that you that are listening in can take some notes today for your situations you're dealing with today. And the first thing I recalled as I did that review is the very first thing we began with was a listening tour. We went to 7 cities and talked to our franchise owners, the general managers of our restaurants, and our customers, and just listened, brought an empty notebook with white paper in it, and wrote down everything they told us that because your audiences tell you the truth. You don't have to make this stuff up. It's out there if you go listen. And I will tell you, in any situation where you need to quickly put an action plan together, your first step has to be listening to your constituents. Ask them what's happening. Ask them what's wrong. Ask them what they need done. At Popeyes, what that looked like is our franchisees had 7 years of declining sales and profitability, and they were real sick and tired of that. Wow. And they had some ideas about how to turn it around, but they didn't feel listened to. They didn't feel like anybody was taking any notes. And as a result, they were real skeptical that this new team, which, by the way, was the 4th new team they'd seen in 7 years, a lot of skepticism about whether we were going to do anything to help. One of the franchisees looked at me and he said, "You need to understand, we are abused foster children. And you are our new foster parents. Don't expect us to trust you anytime soon. So the first step in any kind of leadership role, and particularly in crisis or transition, is building trust, and listening is the path to that. So first and foremost,
go ahead.
First and foremost, listen.
That's great. Let me, sorry, I jumped in with the, I was going to ask a particular question to your listening. Can you remember, this is might be in the weeds or maybe too granular, but can you remember any of the particular questions that you found helpful?
Well, you know, I think getting in the weeds is real relevant. We asked a group of single moms how much money they had to spend on lunch with their family at Popeyes. And they gave us a number, and they said $5 for a family, not for a person.
Wow.
It was a difficult, we were headed into those difficult economic times, and money was tight. And to hear that from the mouth of a mother feeding children on the you know, way home from school or the way to a soccer game was really revealing. And we organized our promotions around a $5 price point for the next 5 years. And so really getting deep with what the barriers are in your customer's mind to coming more often, a critical thing. One thing I hear people asking right now is, what do you need from me that I can sell you even though my restaurant is not open, right? Restaurants have pivoted to selling gift cards. They've pivoted to selling groceries. They've pivoted to doing delivery and carry out, all kinds of creative ways that are responsive to their customers.
I love beginning with that listening. Take us to the next one. What's the next thing you learned, understood, that you saw?
So the next thing I'd talk about is focus on the vital few strategies that will impact performance. All organizations are working on too much, and it's the leader's responsibility to tighten that up to the vital few and give them clarity of direction on what you're going to work on and equal clarity about what you're not going to work on. When we came to Popeyes...
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what were they working on? How much was on their plate at the time?
We audited the active projects on the first day at Popeyes, and there were 128. And I might remind you that business had been declining for 7 years, so you could argue none of them were driving performance. We chose 11 things to turn around Popeyes. We found we couldn't do 11, and we narrowed it to 7. And I would tell you what we did well were 3. I've come to believe that the human being and the organization can do 3 things. And so don't overwhelm your organization. Pick the vital few and get everybody rowing in the same direction.
I love it.
We then did something very specific. We made teams on those 3 things and put somebody in charge of a cross-functional team to work together so that our talent across the organization was brought to bear on that problem. And they were given the agility to solve that problem quickly and bring that back to leadership. I thought that made a huge difference in how the speed of which we could act. And by the way, that's working right now in the COVID situation as companies are dividing into teams. Who's closing the stores? Who's going to plan the reopening? And who's going to plan for the technology change that's going to occur forever as a result of this crisis? Those are different teams.
And you specifically chose cross-functional teams, and I'm imagining that that played into really exposing, bringing some of this talent to the surface. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So important. All companies and organizations end up being siloed. You only know your little piece of the action, and you become ineffective as an organization because nobody's working together to make great things happen. And so a cross-functional team draws on every discipline in the organization so that every perspective is represented. And you don't miss things. Like if you don't test a new product in a restaurant before you roll it out, you have horrendous mistakes, right? And so if there's an operator on your team, they will say, test that, right? They'll tell you the truth right up front so that you can address it. You also learn to appreciate diverse experience and points of view when you have cross-functional teams. If we're all thinking alike, we have huge collective blind spots. So cross-functional teams are the fastest way to eliminate your blind spots. It's also the fastest way to surface your high performers, because if you give people the freedom to contribute outside their discipline, you find out who really has that capability to move across the organization and add value.
So what did you learn about that, or any stories that come to mind about how you saw talent really rise to the top because of these cross-functional teams?
Yeah, one of the best stories that came out of that, we had a team charged with figuring out how to build more restaurants profitably for the owners, very important part of our growth strategy. And the person assigned, the head of that team, was running investor relations. She was not doing anything related to opening new stores except telling Wall Street about it. But she was a very good project manager. She was a very good collaborator. And today she's a vice president of development in restaurants, which means she now runs the new store opening capability for another company post Popeyes. And I love that story because Here's a person with a lot of capability, but we never would have seen it or moved her into that functional area had we not experienced her capability in a cross-functional team.
I'm thinking about my own organizational situations right now, Cheryl, and the challenges that I feel around that is, because I love the story. I mean, it's such a great success story that you had this person, I don't want to say buried, but maybe hidden over here in investor relations. Turns out this person had this great ability to develop people and open up new stores. What are some of the obstacles that people give? I can think of a few that immediately come to my mind as to why that might seem inefficient, or it might cause somebody to have to learn something that's not necessarily in their sphere of responsibility. What are other obstacles that people bring up as to why they wouldn't just create teams like that?
Yeah, so they always bring up risk, and there is risk. Mm-hmm. Like, this leader could have said, well, what if I go over to development and I don't have a path back? You know, what if I flop over there and nobody gives me a path back to finance? What then? So I would tell you these kind of moves require leadership sponsors. Like, I was the sponsor in this case, and I said, I will watch to make sure you're set up for success. And if we do this for a year or two, I will bring you back if that's the right answer. But without that kind of commitment from your supervisor, you might be reluctant to take a risk. I will just tell you, though, that the statistics say that people who become general management in an enterprise, whether it's profit or nonprofit, rotate through different functions and gather the total skills required, or at least the majority of the skills required to be a general manager. So the person has to take a risk, and the organization has to take a risk.
I love that. And I don't want to jump too quickly into some of the current crisis that we're in the middle of right now as we have this conversation. But I've talked to our team about that, hey, some of the silver lining, some of the positives, the opportunity of what we're in the middle of right now is that, you know, take this, for instance, I didn't know how to execute this kind of technology, as simple as it is. I had never had to do this. I'd never had to have a call like this and figure out how to record it. Our team, you know, people that were in charge of live production came over and helped set this up so that I could do this out of my home. There's some skills that we're going to learn that I think is going to open up more opportunity for us in the future, but also might just be what we look back on and go, oh, I didn't even realize, but that was getting me prepared for this. I would assume you've seen that in your background as well, thinking about your own story.
Absolutely. I think we're learning all kinds of things right now that we're going to keep after the crisis, which is the huge advantage of a crisis, is what you can learn from it that advances your capability. Technology will certainly be one of those. The effectiveness of working from remote locations will be one of those for sure. So I think you always look for the silver lining in a crisis.
Yeah.
And you always look for people to lead in a crisis that have that hope, full positive energy that there's a solution here, right? And I'm going to go after. I look for two things. I look for the attitude of the leader towards the crisis. Are they a can-do, we will get through it, we will see the other side of this with, you know, conviction, because you're leading people and they got to believe.
Yes. Yes.
And two, do they really have the gritty project management skills, communication skills, collaboration skills required to move quickly in teams? In this case, you know, grabbing someone from a particular function in your enterprise and saying, I know for a fact that if something has to be done in 48 hours, that's who I'd give it to.
Yep.
And give them a shot at this, because they're going to bring all that to bear, and you're going to find you're going to benefit from their skills, and the whole organization is going to learn about that leader in a new way.
Even if it's outside of their normal everyday working role that they're in.
Yes, you'll find you will have developed awareness of their skills that will last forever, and other people in the enterprise will tap into them too in the future.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I want to get back to this roadmap for success that you've really laid out, that you walked into, that you helped implement at Popeyes. You started with beginning a listening tour. You chose the highest impact strategies. You made sure that you were equally clear about what you were not going to do. You went from 128 to 11 to 7. And if you said you could do it over again, you would have only chosen 3. And then you assigned cross-functional teams to each of these high impact strategies, which brought out this new workforce, this new set of talent that was hidden or buried or just wasn't seen. You want to go to the next one?
Yes, I think the next one, and we've started to talk about it already, is watch for emerging talent and coach talent like crazy. Tell you, Clay, the number one issue I see with leaders of people is they do not take time to set clear expectations and to coach their team members along the way. And when I say coaching, I don't mean tell them what to do. I mean, ask them questions that illuminate discovery for them, right? I want them to learn from this experience. I don't want to tell them how it's going to turn out. And this is the place where supervisors need to invest more energy. Because if I don't know what you want from me, and you are not making yourself available to me when I hit roadblocks or lack of resources or need for a situation I haven't seen before, if you're not available to me for that, you're not a very good leader. In fact, Clay, if someone comes in my office and says, I have a poor performer and I want to do something about it, I turn back to them and say, what did you do as the leader to set them up for success? And when you can explain that to me, we'll talk about it again.
I feel like this cannot be overemphasized how important this is, the idea of coaching through questions. Why through questions? Why not? I know it seems like you were very specific to say that the coach does not tell you what to do. The coach asks questions to help draw that out of you, to help you become self-aware of it yourself. Why is that so important?
Well, I'll throw it back at you. How much do you like getting lectured by your boss? Now, I won't pick on him in particular. He's just anybody's boss, but nobody really likes hearing a lecture from their boss, right?
Yeah.
All the thrill of learning is in personal discovery. And to be honest, I did not learn this early in my career. I learned it from a great HR professional at Popeyes who said to me, the only way people truly grow and learn is through self-discovery. They have to learn it themselves. And, you know, parents often call that hitting a brick wall, right, when you're raising your kids. But how many times have we seen they had to fall off the bike to learn how to ride the bike? I can't explain it to them in visuals, you know. So the same is true at work. It's just true that we learn through discovery. And interestingly, my coaching skills were taught to me by Campus Crusade, not by corporate America.
Tell me more about that.
They asked me to mentor a senior leader in their organization, and they said, we will not let you have access to one of our senior leaders till we're assured that you know what coaching looks like. And they put us all the mentors through a coaching clinic, a very excellent tool that's actually called the coaching clinic. And it taught me what the questions look like that lead to human discovery. Now, I'm still not brilliant at it. I have a lot of tell you what to do in my personality, right? And my husband would say I have way too much of that. But on my good days, I want to ask the right questions so that you can walk away with true insight and breakthrough in your understanding. Because the next time I want you to be able to do it yourself.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to double click on that and spend so much time on that, but I just know, Cheryl, for me as a man, I don't feel intuitively or naturally like a very good manager, but I feel like what has helped me more than anything else as a manager are the times when I have chosen to ask questions and press in with a well thought out, well prepared question for more insight, more understanding, because I couldn't agree more. It's just the way it's the way we want to be led, but it's also the way that it's the way that we actually change and grow as people. Do you want to take us to the next one? After you helped establish those strategies, the talent started to arise. You started to coach that talent, and tell us what happened next in your plan.
Well, we'll wrap this point with measuring results. We had a leader at Popeyes that said, "You move what you measure." And there could be nothing more true than that, is the people in the organization need to know how you're going to measure success. And so we picked a specific concrete measurement for every strategy in our roadmap plan. So, for example, we said our drive-through times must come down to below 180 seconds per car at lunch. You know, it was concrete.
Wow.
We said that our cash on cash returns for our owners had to be in the 20s or even the 30% by the time we became a highly functioning company. We had real concrete destinations. We said we wanted restaurant operating profit to be in the mid 20s. And at the time it was 17%, so we had a long way to go. So those concrete places, very often leaders don't define the destination clearly. And it doesn't give people what to shoot for and what to measure against. And I would tell you, for 5 straight years, we stayed on those metrics and did not move. And that's what led to the store sales increasing by 50%, the market share increasing by 75%. It was because we tracked it and we were agile and we adjusted to make sure those measures were moving.
You told me in a previous conversation that church leaders are great at picking out metrics, right?
I think we're laughing now, right?
No, I love what you said about this. You said that nonprofits and churches oftentimes will hide behind culture and miss out on the power of really measuring and determining what a win is. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I would even broaden the point, which is I teach servant leadership for a living, but I always anchor it in performance and results. And it kind of puzzles people because basically in current culture, servant leaders are largely nonprofits with no metrics, and corporate world are, you know, not servant leader, but all the metrics. And that's flawed thinking. It's an and, not an or. And the way I say that to servant leaders is we cannot be in service to our teams and our enterprise and not perform well. I mean, that's like saying, I'm a great teacher, but everybody flunks the test. There's no such thing as lack of performance being good for the employees. Just think about it, right? If the organization's declining and people are getting laid off and there's no investment in people or resources to invest in the future, that's not good for anybody. So serving is performing. And I feel really strongly about setting that straight with both profit and nonprofit organizations, frankly, including things like our school system, you know, our schools should both serve our children well, build their character traits, but they should also deliver clear competencies that our children can use to make their way in the world. It's both. It's an and, not an or.
I love that point that you make. That's been one of the more profound things that I've learned from you, is not shying away from saying, hey, the first thing you've got to do is you have to be able to deliver results. That you can't talk about culture, you can't talk about improving the way people feel about working there until you can show that you've that things are going to get better, that you can perform and that the results are going to get better. I want to talk about one particular area where you really made I feel like you withstood a lot of pressure and decided to focus on something that might not have been totally intuitive, but there was a lot of pressure for you to grow the stock price for Popeyes. Is that fair? And you didn't, but you didn't make that one of the results when you listed those out a few moments ago. You didn't at one point mention growing stock price. Tell us more about that decision.
Now, very concrete decision. The team actually went off site to one of those conference rooms with pads all around the walls to write on. And we looked at all the constituents that we had to serve. And in a public company, there's a lot of them. You've got employees, board of directors, accountants, Wall Street. I mean, you could make a pretty long list. And we went through that list and said, who is the most important for us to serve on that list for this business enterprise to thrive and perform? We chose the franchise owner as the most important person to focus on. And in that business model, the reason we chose them is they made all the investment. They built the buildings, hired the people, trained the people, served the community. They were the ones giving generously to their communities. They were the business model. None of us had as much invested as they did. So when we took that to Wall Street, I simply said, listen, don't ask me about the share price. Ask me if my franchise owners are getting better and better business results. And I said, oh, in fact, better yet, why don't you ask them instead of me? Why don't you ask them? And I trained my investors literally to call franchise owners and ask them how their business was doing. And oh, by the way, the stock moved from $13 to $61 over 9 years because we just kept making the model work for the most important people. And I think many public companies could learn from that lesson. And frankly, nonprofits as well. If you serve your main customer well, they thrive and their business performs, it's pretty hard not to deliver for the rest of the audiences.
How did you line up that fabulous team of franchisees, and then how did you help them accomplish those results? What was the secret to that success?
Working collaboratively, openly, transparently with them. They're in franchising. There's a lot of war mentality, we they mentality between the franchise owner and the corporate franchisor. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, central office, you know.
Right.
We're here to help those people.
Right.
The corporate people that swoop in like pigeons, right? And so we had to break down a lot of lack of communication, lack of collaboration. And I'll give you a real simple way the franchise owner taught me this lesson. We had a meeting every quarter with the 12 leaders and franchise owners in our system. And one of them said, I'm really frustrated with the way you bring decisions to us. You always have them all fully baked and just announce that this is what we're going to do. And I said, okay, how could we do that better? And he said, how about you walk into this meeting with nothing on your piece of paper? Don't bring a PowerPoint. And together, we will write down what things need to be addressed. And together, we will decide how to solve them, and together we will do that. And that's how I'll feel good about partnering with you, my franchisor. And that became our rule. It was really hard for type A people to do, is to enter a room without a PowerPoint. But we came in with a pen instead and started working immediately on define the problem, solve the problem, execute the solution together. And we didn't do it right every time. Don't get me wrong, we're humans. But when we did it that way, the results were phenomenal.
Cheryl, that answer is that's going to be something a lot of people want to take a little clip of and send it to the central office or the home office or a boss, because we all know what it feels like to be in the seat of that franchisee who gets invited to this meeting every quarter, and it's just another opportunity for someone to tell he or she what they need to be doing with their time. One simple, effective thing that I've learned that we've started to do at those quarterly meetings that we have is we just start every one of them passing out a note card and say, all right, we're going to take 5 minutes. I want you to write down everything that's working, and I want you to write down everything that's not working. And it just, it's a brain dump right at the beginning that allows us to get those issues and problems and challenges on the table or on the board in this case, so that we can begin identifying those problems. Any thoughts from you on what you did to to really draw out those issues that you would then write down with the pen?
Yeah, it really is that simple. Ask and write it down and say, okay, if you're worried about that, then I'm worried about it too. And be honest, say maybe we can't fix all 10 of those things, but why don't we together pick the three that we want to tackle and get a team on it? I remember one meeting in particular where there was a lot of little stuff getting in the way. And one of our executives said, well, let's call those the hot five and let's knock them out in 30 days. And she took the lead and she reported out every week where we stood on fixing the, you know, top five stupid things that were getting in everybody's way. And they were gone in 30 days. And so ask, write it down, do something about it. It's that simple.
That made me laugh, Cheryl, because the hot five sounds like someone who works at a chicken company would come up with. Let's knock out these hot five. That's great.
Particularly a company that sells spicy chicken.
Exactly. Anything else you want to say about Popeyes? I know we could talk about Popeyes for hours and hours and hours because that experience was, as you said, really the pinnacle of your career. But it really is one of the greatest turnaround stories in American business. So anything you want to say in summary?
Well, I just would like to summarize with that current phrase, rinse, repeat, because we didn't do those things just one time. We were a team for 9.5 years. And I would say on average, we did those steps 3 or 4 times to listen, formulate the answer, and execute the plan. And so rinse, repeat, these are things you repeat, you repeat, you repeat, because you're constantly going back to listen again, reformulate the plan and measure and make sure you're on track. It's a continuous process. It's a discipline, though, that won't disappoint you when it comes to performance.
I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about a couple of different aspects of your career. One of those is I thought it was so fascinating that you now serve on the board of a different chicken company, Chick-fil-A. Tell us about that. How was that being now on the board of what was seen as a competitor? And what have you learned about that? How you seem very willing and able to be really for Popeyes and really for Chick-fil-A. What have you learned about both those organizations and what can you pass on to us?
So I guess it starts with the fact that I genuinely love the restaurant industry, the jobs it provides, the franchising opportunities it provides. I'm just an incredible fan of what this industry provides an opportunity to people, regardless of the brand that's on the sign. So that's where it starts. When I came to Atlanta, Georgia, one of the first restaurant meetings I was at, Dan Cathy from Chick-fil-A was there. And to his credit, he walked over and said, "Welcome to Atlanta. I consider you my partner in poultry." And I thought, what a lovely way to be welcomed to this town as a partner in poultry. And so I think I learned something that day about being a competitor. You know, it really is about all of us going to market, doing our best work. The truth about Chick-fil-A, and it's in the numbers in our industry, they are by far the best restaurant operator in the quick service restaurant business. I have immense respect for them. Wow. I learn from them every day. I did when I was a competitor, and I do now, getting to be close to the family and the leadership team. It's an honor and a privilege. I would tell you I eat there a fair amount now.
This might be hard to answer in a succinct way, but what do you feel like is the thing for them? What's the thing that they know that other people just don't know that really has led to their success?
Well, for people of faith, it's from Matthew, it's second mile service. It's going the second mile. It's not just doing what's expected. You know, like in our business, you're supposed to get hot food fast. You're not supposed to wait in the drive-through line 10 minutes, you know? But they view that as just table stakes. They think you deserve the "it's my pleasure." They think you deserve a positive surprise, you know, of warmth and, you know, friendly people and kindness. And they do it every single day in every single car. And so I just hold them up as the best example of second mile service in a service business.
Well, their industry has certainly been disrupted, just like every industry has been disrupted just in the last couple of weeks. But when we're having this business breakfast event that was going to be a live event, we were gathering hundreds of business leaders in the Atlanta area, but obviously we're doing this over a video chat right now because of the COVID crisis that we're in the middle of as a country. I would imagine, Cheryl, once you're done with this phone call, that you're going to move on to the next one, and you're going to sit in another board meeting of another organization where they're having conversations about this. How are you encouraging and advising companies during these times?
Well, one of the ways I advise all of us on this call is please think about the people employed by our restaurants in our community. They count on their paychecks just like we all count on our paychecks, and they are struggling to get work. So carry out and delivery are two safe ways in the current climate to continue to interact with restaurants. Buying gift cards for when the crisis is over is a way to get cash in the hand so that they can continue to pay people. One of the restaurants in my neighborhood on Saturday morning just passed out boxes of pancakes for breakfast, $10 a box, and they're a barbecue joint. So, it wasn't even their main thing, but they said, here's a way we can help. We can make your breakfast, and you can help us keep our team members paid. So, in fact, there's a lot of GoFundMe accounts today online for restaurant staff to help them pay their rent and utilities until they're back at work. So the most generous giving thing we can do right now is to help them get through the crisis.
I love that, because there are plenty of restaurants, as I'm just sitting here thinking about this now, there's restaurants that I know have provided a lot of great experiences of joy, both for my family, but for my wife and I, or to groups of friends. And I love the simple, practical ideas that you just gave of ways that we can really pay it back or even pay it forward for them. That's terrific. What would you say to a leader today who's nervous, worried, concerned, wishes they had more cash on hand, but they just don't, and they're looking out at the landscape and seeing the absolute halt that feels like is happening in front of us? What would you say to encourage them?
Yeah, so I've probably been on 10 planning calls in the last 7 days with different companies and leaders, and they're all facing the same list of questions. I will tell you, first and foremost, the thing that impresses me the most about great leaders in this circumstance is the good ones are reaching out for wise counsel. Your job one is to say, who's ever seen anything closely resembling this that could help me? Like anybody that was through 9/11 or anybody through, the bank failure or any kind of major crisis, let me go find them and ask them questions. So get out there and ask for wisdom from your trusted advisors. The second thing I'm telling people is to communicate truthfully, quickly, and in the moment with their teams. You can't tell them right now what the future brings. You don't know, but you can tell them what you're doing this week. You can tell them why you made those decisions, and you can tell them why that's evidence that you care. For example, I've been with companies who are saying, we are furloughing you right now for 2 weeks because we want to be here to reopen in 2 weeks so that you will have a job. So let me explain how that's going to work. We're all going to feel pain for a period of time so that this enterprise will be there for you when we can reopen these stores. And so tell them the truth. The other thing that I am telling people in this crisis is it's a little counterintuitive, but you can love people through a crisis. Mm-hmm. And let me explain that. I'm a board member right now of a company in bankruptcy, and the COVID crisis is not something they needed on their plate right this minute, as you can well guess. But we, the board, and other trusted advisors can come alongside them. We can help them make the incredibly difficult decisions. We can tell them we care about them. This morning I held the phone out here for one of them just to scream in the phone. And I said, go ahead, scream as loud as you need to scream. I'm here for you. We can love people through a crisis and build deeper, truer relationships with one another. And by the way, that's all we're going to remember about the crisis is who we went deeper still with during this time. So I really encourage people to think about ways today they're going to be loving on the people that they're working with.
Well, you know, just as an example of how I've seen you do this, we're on a phone call a couple of days ago. You're serving right now on a task force for our church, trying to figure out, hey, what are the needs of the community and how can we respond and how should we be responding? And you took a moment at the end of the call to just say, hey, I just want to let you know, you've got a church of people that are ready to go and they're ready to serve and they're ready to help. And we're going to make a big difference. And that was a huge encouragement to me. So thank you for, I feel like you're modeling that, even when you're not the CEO of the organization. And I think that's, it was a good reminder to me that you don't have to be, the point leader to be able to bring that kind of positivity and hope that you referred to earlier in this conversation. So thanks for doing that,
well,
Cheryl. That was tremendous.
If I could build on that, Clay, for just a second, I really, the reason I called that out is because it's actually true about what you and the staff at Buckhead Church are doing. You are one of many campuses in North Point Ministries, but you're not sitting around waiting for a big coordinated system-wide response. You're saying, who comes to Buckhead Church? What are their needs? How do we get on it? And you're doing things like, what could we test? What could we try? Could we do the business breakfast online? I mean, who knows? Will it work? Will it not work? I don't know. But let's try some things. Let's get after it. And I think that's leading, that's great leading by example for the whole system, so to speak, that you're willing to stretch, take some risks, get out there and respond to your the attendees of Buckhead Church. You have a young, vibrant, diverse church that's hungry for your leadership in these difficult times. So I do genuinely applaud, Clay, your leadership.
Thank you. Some of that, as you referenced, it's hard to even say. It's the silver lining, though. It's the things that we are going to really learn. And I know there's a lot of hurting people right now. And so I don't know if now's the time to try to figure out what we're learning. Because I think right now, the best thing we can do is be with people and be empathetic with what they're feeling and let them know that there is hope and there is a better day coming. But if we can, for a moment, I would love to get your opinion to just call out some of those things that we should be looking for that are opportunities for us to learn and grow in this season. What do you see?
I'm going to draw your attention to two things. The first one was brought to my attention this morning by a major executive of an Atlanta financial services firm who said she was excited about the creativity and innovation and breakthrough that we were going to learn from this crisis. And I had to think about that for a minute. I had to take like a deep breath and go, really? I think she's right. I think if we allow our teams to be highly responsive to the situation and try and test and be creative, I encouraged another nonprofit yesterday. I said, hey, we were going to have a strategy for this idea next year. Why don't we just try it now and see what happens? There seems to be a hunger for it. Let's act. Let's try it. So I would say creativity and innovation are usually the most transformative part of a crisis in the end. You'll look back and you'll say, you know, let's take Skype or Zoom calls this week, right? Those companies have transformed their depth of penetration with their customers in the last two weeks, completely unexpectedly. Yeah. So transformed. What else can they do, right? So let's be really creative and innovative. And then the other, I'm going to kind of flip to the whole other end of the spectrum. I'm going to ask all of you on this call, you know, what maybe is God trying to teach us through these times? I think everything happens for a reason. I don't think God creates pandemics, but I certainly don't think he's surprised. And so I think a wake-up call for all of us. One of the things I'm thinking about a lot is the pace at which we're living our lives. I had just read this book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry 4 weeks ago. You know, I guess I was getting prepared. And this book said, you know, we need to learn a hard lesson that we need to go back to the disciplines of solitude, the discipline of Sabbath, the disciplines of spending time with those we love in relationship, deeper still. You know, busy has become our new social status symbol. And busy is not a good thing. We want to do some big, important work in our callings, but we do not just want to write down on the tombstone, I was incredibly busy, thank you. You know, that's not it. And so I hope all of us will say, maybe this crisis is a reset button for the pace and tempo of our lives. I talked to a very high-powered executive in New York yesterday morning, and he said, I got to tell you, I just love being home with my kids. It's a little crazy, and yeah, there's, you know, technology in every room, and the Wi-Fi is not working very well, but I'm really loving hanging out with my family. And I said, well, treasure it, because that's a gift. That's a gift.
I was in a group this week where a guy said, yeah, I've really gotten to know my kids better this week. Which I thought, even that, to your point, I think that slowing down, as hard as it might be, and it's obviously going to come, there's going to be some challenges ahead. But I do think you're right. That might be one of the things that God's trying to do through this, is to use this as a season that helps us, resets our pace, maybe, for a new way of life.
Well, that's certainly my personal objective, is I hope to turn this crisis into an opportunity to go deeper with a few people and make a bigger difference in a few lives, and not be so caught up in the many, 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 many things. So if that encourages any of you, I hope it brings you a little bit of peace among a very stressful situation.
I love that. Cheryl, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Our hope through this is to develop some conversation around this content for people, that people maybe would use this content as a way to meet other people, to network with other people, or as a way to help your team at work. And I think you've certainly given us a lot to chew on, a lot to digest. And what's amazing is I get the feeling that we did not even scratch the surface on both your experiences, but also your wisdom. So if you are in that wisdom season of life, I'm certainly glad that you're in it. It's making a difference for sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to the Buckhead Church podcast. If you'd like more content, you can always check out our services live or on demand at buckheadchurch.org. And if you want to experience community anytime, anywhere, go to buckheadchurch.org/groups.